He went into my truck, and this had never happened before. We had been doing that for, gosh, 10, 12 years at least. And then all of a sudden, after Nina came in, he started running into me, and I didn't like that a bit. But he apologized. He told me he was sorry about 10 times. He didn't mean to do it and this and that. So I dropped it, and nothing ever happened. We became, you know, pretty good friends. But one day, this supervisor, he went out to me and he said, "Joe, I want you to know that I have no hard feelings towards you. You picked your side, and we have to respect you for that. So, at least in my part, I want you to know that." I said, "Fine, you know, I appreciate that very, 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 very much. I really thank you." And that was the end of the conversation. And the others basically told me more or less the same thing, not in other words, but, you know, they continue talking to me in a very, very nice way. So that told me that they were not bitter towards me in any way.
So this is like maybe a year or two, several years or a year after?
No, that was just...
right after?
Just a few months after the signing of our contracts, you know.
So it was, yeah. Fairly, still recent.
Yeah.
And how long did you work with DiGiorgio?
Well, at DiGiorgio, altogether, because I left and came back, at DiGiorgio, I worked easily about 14 years.
Oh, wow.
And at Shane Lee, about 9 years.
That's a long time.
Altogether, 20 some odd years at these two corporations, these two big outfits. They had a lot of people working there. But I should mention something that's interesting here. Both companies divided up their land and they sold it. In other words, DiGiorgio is not there where it was anymore. That ranch is not. Chinle is not there. Chinle was sold. Chinle is now called White River Farms, and DiGiorgio doesn't exist as far as I know. And a lot of labor contractors went around saying, "See what the union done? They forced DiGiorgio and Chinle to disappear, you know, to sell their land. They couldn't pay you the wages that you wanted. You broke them." They were making all sorts of stories, blaming the union for that. But the truth of the matter, and all of this is documented, Laura, the truth of the matter is that in 1903, there was a law passed called the Reclamation Act. This was at a time in history, Laura, where some people had land as far as I could see. And history records that one farmer one day said, "I can ride for 3 days on horseback and never get out of my land." You know, they had like the Lux Company and Santa Fe. I forget now, but history is telling us that there were some growers that had all kinds of land, a lot of land. And the government was saying, you know, we can't have this, you know. So when these canals were brought in, like the Fryant and other canals all over here, the federal government said anybody can use water from this canal. But after an X number of years, they're going to have to subdivide their land and sell it. They will be able to keep 160 acres, the husband, 160 acres, the wife, and also the children. Something like that, Laura. And a lot of these big companies, they got water from that canal because actually it was subsidized water that wasn't really costing them anything. And they figure, the companies figure, well, when the time comes, after 10 years or whatever, we'll fight it and we will not sell our land. We'll keep our land. Well, for all of these years, I came to find out later on by reading some books that DiGiorgio and his attorneys had been keeping that law from being enforced, you know. But even 10 years before the strike started, the company had agents driving pegs into the ground and putting markers into the ground. At that time, we didn't know what was happening, you know. And they were marking off land and all that. And finally, the day came where I guess the government got real serious or something, and DiGiorgio had to subdivide their land into 160-acre parcels and sell it, you know. Again, the idea was that, you know, one person shouldn't have 20 square miles of land, you know, that's not reasonable. But of course, now today, the labor contractors, the growers, and people that don't want to do some research, they believe that,
yeah,
you know. And you could tell them till you bring the face what really happened at DiGiorgio and Chinle. But still, they had much rather prefer that the union ran them out of business.
That's very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
One day, 20 years ago, about 15 years ago before the strike started, I read a pamphlet, a little booklet that somebody gave me. It spoke about DiGiorgio. Way back then, DiGiorgio had $86 million in money alone, plus countless acres of land and packing houses and cold storages and things like that. So how could 25 cents an hour break a company like that? I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but the labor contractors, they want to believe that, so that's their prerogative, I guess. Yeah.
See, those are the people you want to change. You want to sit there and talk to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have notes there? Was there anything?
No, we went through them.
Okay.
I went through them. Our work in New York, the boycott in Los Angeles, and the growers signed contracts. Then when I went to Selma, then when I got sick and got out. So all this was covered.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see if I have anything.
I went to La Paz not too long ago. Is it still on?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I went to visit them, but hardly nobody was there, and they were out. Everybody was out on assignment, and I wanted to sit down and talk to them the way we used to, but things have changed even over there, you know. Most everything is done by appointment. One day about 10 years ago, me and my mom and my dad were heading out. We were going to go on vacation. We were headed that way. And I told them, Mom, Dad, let's stop here in La Paz and rest a while and talk to the people maybe an hour before we go. They said, okay. They had a checkpoint just before getting to that thing. And this youngster Said, did you call in ahead of time? I said, no. You know, I've been with the union for 8 years, and they know me, and I just want to come in and talk, you know, and walk around. He said, well, no, you can't do that anymore.
Well,
I said, what do you mean, you know? So, anyway, we had to go back and turn around. We got in our cars, and as we were 10 miles away, I told my mom, you know what, Mom? I got very, very, very angry because they wouldn't let me into La Paz. But then, in reality, I shouldn't be angry. There's people who have been threatening Cesar's life, and it got to a point where they are enforcing security, and they're doing things that were not done before. And I shouldn't get mad, you know. I shouldn't get mad at them. That youngster at the gate, he didn't know me. And even if he knew me, he had instructions, you know, what to do and what not to do. So I shouldn't get mad. And I settled down.
Yeah. Well, things change.
Yeah. Then we got to learn to accept, you know, yeah, changes like that.
Do you have any contact with them now? Other than a few pictures?
Yes. I don't call them very often, and they don't call me very often. A while back, they wanted me to come back and work for them again. And I told them, you know, that because of my age, I don't think I could handle it anymore, you know. They said, no, we don't work hard the way we used to. I said, don't tell me that. I know.
Yeah.
Many people say, oh, the union has these, they have all kinds of money, they have cars, and they have land, and little do they know how far they are from the truth, you know. They're very, very far from the truth. But those are words that the contractors and the growers have started, you know, they started talking in the community, and pretty soon a lot of people are believing that.
I'm also curious, if you don't mind, if we go back to some of the Teamsters stuff. You say that, by and large, most of the unions would support you. You were in conflict with the Teamsters. Were there any other unions that just didn't want to get involved, or were actually in conflict with you?
No, to my knowledge, all of the unions were supportive. Some in a great way, others in not too great of a way, you know, because we do have conservative unions, and we have to live with that. To my knowledge, the Teamsters were the only ones that came out against us. They sided with the growers and came out against us. That's the only union that...
What union would help you the most, do you think? What union helped you the most? Would it be different cities? And,
okay. It's something geographical, really. But the union that I myself will never forget, and I have a lot to be thankful for, is the United Auto Workers. Yeah. And I came to find out later on that they didn't only help the farm workers, they help groups around the community. They like to get involved, you know. Their psychology is like that. And again, there are areas where even they are on the conservative side, you know. Yeah. What can you do?
Yeah.
Every place that I went, the Jewish people were very, very helpful. They cooperated with us a lot. And like I already mentioned, the students were super. In Chicago, I met some organizations that were not too super. And I'm speaking about Latino organizations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is kind of strange, but it's the truth. And the truth, whether we like it or not, we should always mention it, you know. In the eastern part of the country, like Cleveland, other parts over there, I went to Los Charros de Guadalupe, Los Caballeros, this and that. They were organizations, fraternal organizations from Mexico, mostly the one that I visit, some from Puerto Rico. The Mexican organizations had much rather give me money and kind of say, you know, Joe, kind of.
Don't mention their name? is that what they'd say? Just give me money and distance?
Yeah, kind of stay away. They wouldn't say it like that, but you know, it. You could sense, you know, that they were giving you money and they would kind of feel, well, we done our part, you know. The Puerto Ricans were very, very good. They helped us out a lot, you know. And of course, the movie industry helped us a lot. Mm-hmm. When I say the movie industry, I mean, you know, the movie stars. In Los Angeles, this young, beautiful actress, Leslie Parrish, she was the president, the director, or whatever, of the Hollywood Support Committee, we called it. And she had a lot of people, a lot of movie stars, like the one that came out in, Craig Morris, or something like that. It's been so many years ago. Anyway, she had a lot of movie stars that were big name movie stars that would help us. Like an example of the help they gave us is that in Coachella and in that area, the farm workers were on strike. One day they made a march. I think from Coachella all the way into Calexico. Mm-hmm. And I told our Hollywood Support Committee that this was going on, and Leslie and a lot of them, they organized two busfuls of movie stars. And here we are talking about at least 80 people, you know, two Greyhound busfuls of movies, 80 people, more or less, you know. And we went over there, and we caught up with the marchers when they were about 15 miles outside of Calexico. So they parked the buses, and the captains told us to get at the end of the line, you know, the way they do all the time, you know. And we got at the end of the line, and we marched all the way into Calexico. Now here's something funny, Laura. This young movie star, about 100 feet before we got to the park, she passes out. She was not the only one that ever passed out. About three or four passed out of the heat. It was hot that day, you know. But this one was kind of funny because, you know, when she was in a daze, she said, Joe, but I made it, didn't I? I made it, huh? I made it. It was very important in her mind to be able to make it. The park was just a little short ways there. And it was very important, you know, to her that she made it to the park. And it was funny because, you know, they're not used to the hot weather, you know, in their air-conditioned homes and all that. But they were very, very helpful. They were very, very good. That day, as we were coming into Calexico, and this I didn't find out until the very end, everybody was going to march into Mexico and block the entrance, you know. And again, this is recorded somewhere in some book someplace. But after a brief conference, our leaders decided maybe it wasn't such a good idea, you know. We were trying to give them a message, you know, don't come over here and break or strike. But anyway, we didn't do it. We marched back and went to the park where a rally was held and music and stuff like that. So there were many people, not only in Los Angeles, but many in Los Angeles that were very, very good supporters of the. There was a mayor there in the city. Maybe I should mention his name. I don't know if the guy's still alive or not. But that mayor was very conservative. In fact, I'll go ahead and say his name. It was Mayor Yordi. He was very, very conservative. Every Monday, I would go into his office and he would give me all kinds of office supplies. Pencils, writing tablets, Xerox paper, mimeograph paper, you name it. His joke, don't ever, ever tell anybody that I was helping you. If you do, I'll only deny it. I said, don't worry, I promise I will. But here it is, what, 65, 75, 85, 95, 30 years later, I guess it doesn't hurt to say
That's amazing, because I know he was considered a very conservative.
He was very conservative, they tell me, you know. They tell me he was another John Wayne. And I went up to him and I told him, look, you know what we are, you know what we're fighting for, you're a highly intelligent man, you know, you don't need any information, we need help. And that's when he decided, you know, that he would help us, but under that condition, never to tell anybody. But here it is, 30 years later, and
I think it's.
I don't think we're hurting anybody, too. I don't even know if he's alive.
I don't know. I don't remember offhand. Yeah. But I think that's important. I mean, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. And this is the first time that I have mentioned that.
Well, that's a nice little tidbit. That tickles me because I knew I know that mayor.
The one that that I myself, through other people, I used other movie stars to try to talk to Ricardo Montalban, and he wasn't interested. But then, many, many years later, I saw where Cesar Chavez went to visit. He's pictured in sitting there in a sofa, talking to Ricardo Montalban and another one. ¿Cómo se llamaba ese? Se llamaba, you know, really big.
Rita? Rita Moreno?
No.
No?
No, this is a
male. A man. Ricardo Montalban. Español o mexicano?
Es Hispanic.
No, mexicano, pero español.
Yeah. No sé. Anyway. But then it was a lot easier for Cesar Chavez to get to those, talk to those people than it was for me. They didn't know who I was. They knew I was the founder, but I don't know. There's people that had much rather talk to people that's in a higher level, you know. I didn't sound important to him, you know. He probably said, well, I'll wait till the big boy comes along.
It's 12:20. How are you on time?
Well, I told my mom that when I got back,
My sister called me this morning and said, you know, when you get done with the interview, bring my mom over here, and because she just got back from Mexico, you know, and all that. But you know what I would like to do, Laura?
What's
up? I would like to take you to eat. But here in Ernie Mike, there's not a decent place, you know. No nada in Ernie Mike. And but I would like to take you to eat. We would have to go to Pixley. Ahí es un restaurante grande mexicano.
I have plenty of time, yeah.